Morning. It's actually nice to be back in the, or good afternoon, it's nice to be back in the press conference room for a press conference. So I appreciate y'all being here today. And I have a few comments. I'll turn it over then to Senator Newton, who will have some remarks, and then we will take questions. Many of you probably watched the Senate Ag, Energy, and Environment Committee meeting just a little bit ago. I'm now joined here by the chairs of that committee, as well as Senator Newton, who serves on the committee. The purpose of the press conference here is to share with you all directly what's going on and why, give you the opportunity to ask questions that you might have. Yesterday afternoon, I informed Governor Cooper that his nominee to lead the Department of Environmental Quality did not have the votes for confirmation in the Senate. If Governor Cooper does not withdraw her nomination, Ms. Delegati will not be confirmed by the Senate. For the record, over the past 5 years, the Senate has confirmed each of the 15 cabinet secretaries Governor Cooper has proposed, even though we had considerable policy differences with many of those nominees. This decision goes beyond basic policy differences. North Carolina faces an urgent problem, which could turn into a crisis in a matter of minutes, in its reliance on single pipelines, and particularly a single pipeline for its entire supply of natural gas. That pipeline that we currently have, the Transco pipeline, is fully subscribed. That means there is no additional gas available to service North Carolina's growing population and manufacturing base. And if that pipeline were to go down, the state's energy producers tell us the impacts would be immediate. A strategy or even just a few tactics to address this urgent problem could be discussed and debated on the merits. But there is no strategy that Ms. Delegati offered to us to debate. When asked about the Cooper administration's position on natural gas, in other words, what's the strategy here, she said she didn't know. And when asked if she's familiar with the most important proposed infrastructure project in North Carolina at the present time, the proposed MVP Southgate pipeline, she said she only knew, quote, a little bit about it and had some briefing materials. Experts recently told the Senate that North Carolina's reliance on a single natural gas pipeline is the state's, quote, number one vulnerability. Based on her confirmation testimony, Ms. Delegati has only a cursory understanding at best of the most urgent energy problem facing North Carolina. That is disqualifying. I'll now turn things over to Senator Newton to go into a little more detail, and then again, we will take your questions.
Thank you, Senator Berger. Hello, everyone. Wanted to give a little more context in that one-third of North Carolina's electricity is generated from natural gas. That's nearly 90% of North Carolina homes using natural gas or electricity for heat, and nearly all homes use electricity for air conditioning. North Carolina, as Senator Berger noted, relies on a single gas pipeline, Transco, for its entire supply of natural gas. And that's unique. Most states of a similar size have a network of pipelines to provide redundancies and reliability to their energy supply. We recently saw what happens when a critical pipeline goes down. Colonial was, of course, liquid fuel, not natural gas. The repercussions of the Colonial petroleum pipeline hack were felt by nearly all North Carolinians for days. In fact, I heard this morning that people are still feeling the effects with gas stations not fully stocked with gas. But as the committee heard from the North Carolina's energy producers and states, the state's former top regulator just 2 weeks ago, a Transco pipeline disruption would be even worse than the Colonial disruption. The impacts would be immediate, and depending on the time of year, a Transco pipeline disruption could cause immediate blackouts across the state, loss of heat and air conditioning for our homes, and a shutdown of the state's manufacturing operations. The Chamber of Commerce has noted that a Transco outage could cause a would likely result in dire consequences. They warned that local economies would sputter to a stop, and that a natural gas supply disruption could become critical, especially during an extreme weather event, as was experienced by Texas this winter. So it's simply undeniable that a Transco disruption could be catastrophic to our state. And there is consensus among the experts that we brought to committee that having a single natural gas pipeline supplying the needs of our state is our number one vulnerability. And responsibility for planning and action to address that vulnerability depends upon the Department of Environmental Quality. Yet, at her confirmation hearing, Ms. Delegati could not articulate the Cooper administration's natural gas strategy, which she would presumably lead or at least be heavily involved with. When asked, "Do you know what the governor's position is on the expansion of natural gas in North Carolina?" she answered, and I quote, "No, I do not," close quote. That is disqualifying. Nor was she informed about a major pipeline that was under review by her own department. The MVP Southgate pipeline has been in the works for years, and it would deliver additional natural gas to North Carolina from the Marcellus Shale in Pennsylvania. The pipeline would add redundancy to North Carolina's energy infrastructure should the Transco pipeline be disrupted, just as the liquid fuel Colonial pipeline was earlier this month. Yet, Ms. Delegati admitted to senators that she has only, quote, "a little bit of knowledge on it, and I have some briefing materials on it," close quote. 48 hours after she provided that answer, the agency she is nominated to lead rejected a crucial certification, potentially killing that project. When DEQ previously reviewed the permit applications for a pipeline of similar import, the Atlantic Coast Pipeline, records show that former Secretary Regan was heavily involved in monitoring that progress for months. That Mrs. Delegati had only cursory knowledge of the single most important infrastructure project in North Carolina and one her own agency was tasked with reviewing is disqualifying. Making matters worse, the Transco pipeline is fully subscribed, which means every unit of gas traveling through the pipeline has already been purchased. There's no room for growth, even as North Carolina's population and manufacturing base are expected to expand. Dominion Energy warned our committee that their supply from Transco will no longer satisfy peak demand as soon as next year. These are urgent fundamental problems facing North Carolina right this moment. This isn't simply a matter of policy differences. As Senator Berger pointed out, the Senate has confirmed each and every one of Governor Roy Cooper's last 15 cabinet secretary nominees, even though we don't necessarily have a lot in common ideologically. But our objection to Ms. Delegati isn't over the merits of strategy. It's the fact that she's unable to articulate any strategy whatsoever. Ms. Delegati had no knowledge of any strategy for North Carolina's natural gas future, and she was not fully aware of a major pipeline project under review by her own agency. That is disqualifying. And North Carolinians deserve a cabinet secretary who deeply understands the threats to the reliable supply of energy to our state, to North Carolinians' homes and businesses, and has a plan to mitigate those threats. So with that, we're happy, Senator Berger and I are happy to answer any questions you may have.
So prior to Ms. Delegati giving these answers, did she have the votes to get nominated, or was this a total sea change, or was this going, or was this becoming a bit of a non-star with you anyway? What was the setup going into this?
So I don't know that you can say she had or didn't have the votes before she came to the hearing. I think the purpose of the hearing and the purpose of the process is for members to form an assessment as to whether or not this is a person that is qualified, that understands the task ahead, and is capable of performing the task. I think, as Senator Newton has pointed out, the biggest problem that we have with this nominee is the complete lack of one, knowledge of the governor's position on natural gas and what policies he would proposed to adopt, and the fact that the agency, which she, although not confirmed, had been leading for a period of time as the nominee, had no knowledge of the MVP Southgate situation, or at best a cursory knowledge when that was something that was certainly extremely important, continues to be extremely important to the state of North Carolina. I think the fact of the colonial situation has just brought home for folks the real risk that North Carolina faces with the fact that we do not have the kind of redundancy, and just drove home the point that this nominee is someone that is ill-qualified based on her own statements to lead that agency.
So why not give her a chance at that hearing you had on pipeline vulnerability to speak on behalf of the administration about what it's doing? It would seem like a perfect situation for, say, okay, we heard what you said in late April, then we have a pipeline vulnerability in early May. Why not come back? Why not invite her to come and talk about these issues?
If she were aware of the existence of the lack of redundancy, which she should have been at the time of her hearing, that would have been one of the things that she should have articulated as to a plan going forward. What's her plan to deal with the lack of redundancy? If she didn't know that the state of North Carolina faced that problem, then that in and of itself would disqualify her.
I just want to see if you had a response to what the governor's office said about this. They said this has nothing to do with pipelines, and Republican excuses for voting her down are a red herring to prevent her from protecting clean air and water and holding utilities accountable while they negotiate a secret energy bill. Any truth to that?
Any truth to?
Essentially, what they're saying is that all this talk about pipelines, that's not why you're doing this. Some of the negotiations that we know about that Duke Energy has been involved in.
The governor would know a red herring when he sees one, because that issue that he raises is one.
So going back a few weeks, so when the Colonial Pipeline disruption happened, how did that in any way change the trajectory that you all were on dealing with this nomination? I mean, was there any reason to think that really, just because that crystallized in people's minds, the concern about the pipelines, that really had anything to do with whether you were going to approve her nomination or not?
I don't know that the colonial situation changed anything. You'll have to talk to the members of the Senate. It would not have changed anything to me, but I was not in the hearings before. Senator Newton was, Senator Edwards was, Senator Sanderson, and some others. But there were concerns about her from the responses in the hearing, in conversations that were taking place amongst members. So the fact that the Colonial Pipeline situation occurred is certainly something that I think drives home for the public the importance of the redundancy issue, and basically enhances the real questions that existed about her qualifications.
Obviously, energy is a huge industry. Did anyone from that industry, or any corporate, any companies or any business groups reach out and express concerns with her nomination?
Not to me.
Nor to me. I mean, we've had conversations in the past about the lack of predictability in permitting processes in the state of North Carolina, and they seem to be at work, getting worse instead of better. And that's a concern, and it should be a concern to all North Carolinians, because when somebody's going to make a capital investment in the state of North Carolina, they need to at least be able to predict how long it's going to take and how much it's going to cost to get a project through. We've had those discussions, but it had nothing to do with this nominee specifically.
And then also, on the issue of not inviting her to the vulnerability hearing or not hearing from her today, can you just explain the thinking on that process? I mean, because obviously down here, I mean, like literally right now, because there are unanswered questions, we're talking more. So why not do that with her? Why not give her the opportunity to answer more questions?
Travis, she had 2 hours, and she had a full opportunity to explain what she understood would be the governor's position on natural gas, what she understood about the permits or the applications that were existing at the time, and she failed to respond to those questions in a way other than I really don't know. I think every time a problem comes up, do we expect her to have two or three opportunities to fine-tune what her response is going to be? No, I don't think you get mulligans in terms of hearings of this sort. In addition to the fact that she had 2 hours in front of the committee, she also had multiple meetings with members, one-on-one or in small groups. So she has had plenty of opportunity to articulate what her position is or would be, and she has up to this point failed to do so.
Okay, so it's my understanding that in the Select Committee on Nominations, which is the next step usually for confirmation, that the nominee gets an opportunity but isn't required to speak to the committee. Will she get that opportunity?
So again, this is, as has been indicated, the very first time that we have received from the policy committee an unfavorable recommendation. Under those circumstances, the process would be that recommendation goes straight to the floor, and the nomination will not go to the nominations committee.
And what's the basis on that? Do the Senate rules say that?
The Senate rules don't say that specifically, but the Senate rules provide the policy committee chairs with the discretion to make that decision.
Do you know when that vote's going to happen on the floor?
I expect it to be tomorrow.
Tomorrow?
Yes.
And then what happens after?
I'm sorry, I didn't point too fast.
That's okay. So procedurally then, this would be go straight to a floor vote not to confirm then?
The recommendation is not to confirm. We'll have to see exactly how the motion is couched when it's actually brought before the Senate. Again, this is new territory. We have confirmed every other nominee that the governor has sent to us. I'm sorry.
And just so I understand process, once you vote not to confirm, she is then removed from her position. Is that correct? And then the governor appoints a new acting secretary and we start all over. Is there a rule against him appointing the same person, I assume?
My understanding is, and stand to be corrected, and we'll get back to you, but my understanding would be that if she is rejected, she is not qualified to continue to serve and not qualified to be renominated. That is my understanding, yes.
Did the pipeline issue come up at all in the individual conversations that either Senator Edwards, Senator Newton, Senator Jackson, I think you've all mentioned the individual conversations, this process. Did this come up in those, and were the answers any?
I can only speak for myself there, and we did talk about the natural gas pipelines, and I didn't get a dispositive answer one way or the other about what her policy would be around that.
So the same for the chairs?
Travis, and then, sorry to be asking so many, but we are in kind of new territory here. DEQ only has so much power over pipelines, and we kind of got into this with the Atlantic Coast Pipeline. Do you feel that agency, that person needs to have real in-depth knowledge on natural gas, you know, before the Colonial, because this happened, you know, the hearing was a week and a half or whatever before the Colonial Pipeline disaster. Why is that so disqualifying, given that the agency, you know, other than stream crossings, I don't think permits these.
So they are an integral part of any policy around expanding natural gas pipelines. They are wed to the policymaker that would make those decisions. And I'm going to share with you real quickly. Now, this is now no longer on the DEQ website, but it helped answer that question, Travis, for me. Formerly, and I think it was under Secretary Regan, I can't swear to that, but the website for DEQ said that, on this, I'm sorry, here it is, quote, first sentence on the website, it is recognized that that the North Carolina Department of Environmental Quality's primary mission is to protect North Carolina's environment and advance an all-of-the-above energy strategy that fits North Carolina's needs. So they saw themselves in the very near past as being integral to advancing an energy strategy.
When did it become clear that she didn't have the votes? Was it after the which hearing or kind of in the interim?
It was clear that there were a lot of questions all along. It only became clear yesterday. I mean, we caucused it yesterday, had a long discussion with our members, and it was crystal clear at that point. After that, my staff communicated with the governor's staff. I called the governor, left him a message. I spoke with him briefly at the event at the lieutenant governor's house, and then he called me this morning. But it was clear yesterday, I would say.